Good evening, and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Align Saving Kids. Kids of all ages and all stages. Mask is about prevention. Mask is working very, very hard in reducing stigma. Let's cure stigma. Let's all take the pledge to cure the issue of stigma so that parents and just people in general could call, whether it's the Mask Helpline or any organization, to get the help that they may need for any emotional or mental, physical, whether it's gambling, drugs, alcohol, bipolar, schizophrenia, addictions of any sort, internet, call our confidential helpline. Write down our number. Maybe it's for yourself, a friend, a loved one, maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Our confidential number from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. is 718-758-0400. I would like to just let everyone know that we are having our Shabbaton again on this Friday night, and Shabbos. And if anyone still wants to join us, please call us, 718-758-0400. It is going to be in Flatbush in a hall, and we have rabbis that are speaking at all the meals. It's Friday night, and Shabbos lunch, and Shalosh Sudot. So if you are interested or you know someone that would benefit from attending our Shabbaton, maybe someone's dealing with a child that is struggling with at-risk behaviors or prevention, a child that has learning disability and is struggling being asked to leave a school, have those parents call us so that we can set them up to join us this weekend, this Shabbos, at our Shabbaton in Brooklyn. And tonight, I am so happy to have with us not only a colleague, but a wonderful, wonderful, very, very long-time dear friend, Dr. Shana Friedman, who is with us here this evening to talk about her most important work that she does at Shalom Task Force. Thank you. Can I call you Shana?
Absolutely. Hi. It's such a pleasure to be here tonight. Thank you, Ruchama, and thank you, Mask, for all the work that you do in our community. I believe your work really is one of the first voices to destigmatize issues around addiction and families at risk and help family and community members come forward to get the help they need. And I've always admired the work that you do and what Mask does for our community. So thank you, and thank you for having me and representing Shalom Task Force on tonight. We do talk about our work that we do and the work that we do together.
Thank you. It's always wonderful working with you, Shana. I know that every program, should I call you Dr. Shana, probably?
No, absolutely not.
So, Shana, I know that every program that we've worked on in the past, 20 years for sure, has always been a pleasure working with you. And I look forward to continue working with you. You have worked at Med Council for 13 years. You were the creator of the Family Violence Services Program, and we've done a lot of work in the past together while you were there. I know you were in Israel for more than a year, and I want to say Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Unfortunately, we should all go with you back to Eretz Yisrael. But in the meantime, we have a lot of work to do here until we all get back to Eretz Yisrael with you and your lovely children, family, your husband. I want to talk about domestic abuse and how it affects everyone. And I want to offer to my listeners the Shalom Task Force, what their resources and their services are. So let's get right to it. what has Shalom tasked for us?
So, Shalom, I'm very proud and honored to now be the executive director of Shalom Task Force. It's another agency that I've always admired because, like MASC, it's one of the first voices to speak about these often silenced problems in our community. And Shalom Task Force's focus is to combat domestic violence, help people find safety, and do prevention like MASCs, particularly around healthy relationships. So our programs, our most critical program, and I think what people know us most about is our confidential hotline, which is for victims and survivors of domestic violence. They could call it 6 days a week. I mean, it's 1-888-883-2323. And there's someone who answered, a trained volunteer who answers and able to provide a listening ear. The victims know they'll be believed for their experience in domestic violence and also get appropriate referrals to agencies and to practitioners in their local area that we have already vetted to make sure they're appropriate, culturally appropriate, and understand domestic violence. So that's definitely our core service. And as we're entering our 25th year, we've logged over 21,000 calls. So certainly that's our most active service, and I believe is a critical service to the community. Other than that, we also provide a large education program with our focus on prevention. When Shalom Task Force started, they started with a hotline, and often the calls, it was clear that the victims would talk about their dating experience and their courtship and that they felt something wasn't right, but they didn't have words for it. So the agency at that time said, hey, we should address this. We should give our youth, our young people, words for what they experience in dating and help them understand what a healthy relationship is and what are the warning signs, what are those red flags that exist in dating, when you're meeting someone, when you're in a relationship, that will say, hey, I should check into this to make sure that this could be a healthy relationship. So we started going into schools, and I know that last year we went into over 25 schools here in the U.S. and 25 gap year yeshiva seminary programs in Israel, and touched around 2,500 youth, mostly girls, but some boys' schools, to teach them about healthy relationships, unhealthy relationships, warning signs, trusting your gut if something doesn't feel right. What resources can you have? Who can you reach out to check in about that? In addition, we have a program called the Shalom Workshop, which is a program that focuses on engaged and married couples to help them enhance their relationships, really to foster healthy relationships, not about abuse, but to help us create healthier homes, which is something we all want to do in the field. And lastly, we have a program called Sarah's Voice, which is a program that specifically provides legal services to victims of domestic violence in New York City, and represents them in cases, in family law cases. And there's a specialty of cultural competency toward the halachic and legal issues that from victims face. So they're able to help people with based-in process, understand the GET issues, and understand the nuances of our community that do intersect with legal decisions and legal remedies. And that program, all the programs are national. That is programs in New York City-based program. And that program not only represents, but also consults. So if the lawyers are not able to assume full representation, they're able to consult on cases and help give some advice for the victim, the survivor, who's calling. So that's a large overview of what we do here at Shalom Task Force.
Wow. So, yes, for my listeners, you all should know that the Shalom Task Force has been consistently at the forefront of abuse and resources and prevention for the families to continue with the abuse. You have the resources. Anyone that's interested in speaking to Dr. Friedman or to their hotline, please, again, can I ask you to give out the number?
Sure. So it's 718-337-3700 or toll-free 1-888-883-2323.
So, you know, Shana, I want to talk a little more specific because abuse means so many different things. They say that 1 in 3 women are affected by domestic abuse, and then it also says 1 in 4 men are affected by domestic abuse. And that was like a surprising number. It's so surprising. And 1 in 15 children are exposed to domestic abuse each year. So let's talk about that a minute, please. please? Can you tell us more?
I think the important thing when we're talking about domestic abuse, the literature often speaks about intimate partner violence, to bring it a little bit broader. But what we're talking about is not only physical abuse. And I think that's what we think about most is the black and blue marks, and certainly that's the highest risk for fatality, and obviously very concerning when we meet with clients that get calls from survivors, both men and women, who are experiencing physical violence. But the definition of family violence, intimate partner violence, is much broader than just physical violence. It's talking about a pattern of behaviors that is one person has over the other person's about power and control. And whenever you speak out domestic violence, intimate partner violence, you need to remember this idea of pattern and power and control. So it really can encompass an array of different forms of abuse. And when I speak about it, when I'm working with both the survivors or even teaching, we have to identify what are those different, I call it a toolbox of the batterer almost. Like, what are the different ways this batterer obtains and maintains power and control over the victim? And this is not about unhealthy relationships, because I think most people in relationships have unhealthy patches. We're not talking about unhealthy relationships where there is some level of equal power and control and both people have a voice. And they might be going through a hard time. That's a different category. This is about power and control of one member over the other. And it could consist of a number of things. We're talking about verbal abuse, demeaning the other person, minimizing the other person, name-calling, emotional abuse. We're talking about financial abuse, where one member has no access to funds. And it's not about a family budget, right? There's a distinction there. We're not talking about a family budget. We're talking about not having enough money, and when there is enough money, to buy groceries, being questioned about every single purchase, working, and all the money goes into his, and we talk about the batterer mostly as him, and I'll address that in a moment, his account and her having no access to it. So financial abuse. We're talking about, nowadays we talk a lot about technological abuse, which is it's so fascinating because as much as we know technology has its, there are very positive parts of technology and certainly there are a lot of issues in technology, but technology allows people to be stalked in ways that we never had before, where all of our smartphones also have locators on them. And so if someone's trying to escape an abusive relationship, they could be found very easily. Or if they're not choosing to leave the relationship, or they just need a little bit of time in their day, or they don't need to be watched where they're going, and just the other person having access and like, why were you on Central Avenue? Like, why are you constantly going there? Or if they're going to come for help, at one of our agencies and that being tracked. So certain technology, as well as, we talk about cyberbullying with children, but we also see that with an intimate partner where a partner may share pictures that are inappropriate of the other person online, and that really violating the other person. So the internet is another level of technological abuse. And then in our community, we talk a lot about spiritual abuse, which is a little bit harder to define, but I think about it as one partner getting away and controlling the other person's relationship with Hashem, you know, and when we're talking about and their experience as a Jewish person, and that could be not allowing them to keep kosher or on the opposite end, making them keep very strict chumras and making it, you know, not allowing that person self-expression. And we're not talking about negotiation in a healthy or regular relationship where some of those things may be negotiated. We're talking about not allowing and the power and control. So again, we're looking at this pattern of power and control. And then there's also sexual abuse in relationships where we often don't talk about it, but the fact that even in a marriage, people have the right, people should not be coerced into sexual behaviors that they're not comfortable with, and there's no consent in that too, is sexual abuse. So it's this whole, you know, array of behaviors that contribute to this feeling of this experience and dynamic of power and control, and in addition to physical violence. And when you're working with a survivor, victim, you look at all these different patterns to evaluate what's going on and help them explore their options. At Shalom Task Force, as is true of the other agencies I've worked with, we do not tell people to leave relationships. It is absolutely that person's decision of what they want to do next, and we will support them in any way, in any direction they want to go, but to understand that there are options available to them and help them find them so they can really, truly explore what is available out there and not, you know, not just fall back on what their preconceived notions of what is possible for them. So That's when we talk about domestic violence. But I did want to get back to this idea of both men and women as victims. So research around prevalence studies and research about who are the victims and how many victims there are, it's not great. There's not great literature, but we do fall back on the most latest studies of 1 in 3 women experience one of these types of abuse. Doesn't mean all of them, and does not mean only physical violence. And 1 in 4, I believe we're saying now, of men. Now, in our community and most communities, it is very hard to come forward as a victim of abuse, male or female. Absolutely, very, very hard. I would say that for men to come forward, I don't want to say it's harder, because I don't want to minimize the experience of women who come forward, but certainly with our ideas of masculinity and our ideas of what men should do, to come forward to say that they're being abused in any of these ways is very difficult. And certainly that impacts our ideas of prevalence, because in general, domestic violence, intimate partner abuse is very underreported, and certainly men are underreported very much because of all the preconceived notions about men and their roles in relationships.
What about children? Let's talk about the effect that a relationship being such where there is abuse, the effects on the children,
sure.
Whether they're children that's very young or children that are teenagers and suddenly...
Sure. I mean, and I'm sure you see this at MASC often. I mean, we understand that, you know, parents often feel, and you'll hear a victim survivor say, that, oh, my kids have no idea what's happening between us. And they
not
absolutely
true.
Know what's happening. Absolutely.
They absolutely
know what's
happening.
I mean, even if they've never seen a physical fight, or even if they keep it quiet in the bedroom, they absolutely understand there's a dynamic. And so children are traumatized by witnessing this violence between their parents or between adults in the home. And what is the impact of that? So certainly in MASC, I would imagine you see the impact on that in many ways, where that puts the children at risk, right? They're at risk for all the issues that you've mentioned, the addiction issues, the substance issues. They're at risk, higher risk for being victims of sexual abuse because they're just more vulnerable out there. They're more vulnerable to other people. They don't feel that they have the structure at home that protects them as much. That does not in no way, you know, fault the victims here. But certainly they have all the issues that trauma victims have. They have disrupted sleep. They can have medical issues. They have their own emotional, psychiatric, mental health issues that we have to help them address, because witnessing family violence is a trauma. Now, in no way does that mean that children shouldn't have a relationship with the perpetrating parent. I mean, there are very delicate ways to balance that relationship.
But absolutely,
in no way do we want to interrupt the parent-child relationship, but there may be times where we have to take a break or figure out safer ways for them to have that relationship.
Correct.
So,
I'm glad you said that.
And I think something that I want to touch on, I think I started to touch on, was this idea how hard it is to come forward. And I would be remiss not to talk about this.
I wanted to bring that up now.
Yeah.
I'm glad you bring that up. I just wanted to ask you, exactly that, when personal safety, around an abusive parent, what happens when they need a plan?
So I could speak of this from both positions I've been in. So when someone needs a plan, they need to work with someone who really this is their focus of their work. It is very difficult work to come up with the quote-unquote perfect plan. There are certainly resources in our community, and there are ways of accessing resources in the larger community, larger mental health, social service community that help them understand the particular needs of the from community. But there are times that families should be going to a shelter, or there are times that it may make the most sense to involve the local police department to ensure some level of safety. There are times where the court could provide remedies to create some sort of separation, have things calm down a bit, and then figure out a plan. And then the person really should find the support of places like, I imagine, MASC, Met Council, OHEL, Jewish Board. We have lots of resources out there to really slow it down and figure out what they need to do next. And there are legal services that get involved. There's no perfect solution.
There's no one solution.
And there's no one way of doing this. We've seen
right, and we have with us, yeah. I'm going to interrupt you. We
Please.
Have with us, for those that are just tuning in, Dr. Shana Friedman from Shalom Task Force, Sorry, I appreciate that. I wanted them to know.
Yeah, so there's no, and there's, in every situation, really, so if you hear someone, oh, in the community, the police came and they took him away, and, you know, that might have been the appropriate solution and intervention for that family at that time, for those particular details going on in that family. That is not always the right solution, but it can be part of the solution. So you really, it's best to really work with someone who has experience, who has the resources, who knows what's going on, and even then, it may not be perfect, but certainly it would provide, you know, our focus is always around safety. It's always about safety, safety of children, safety of the parents, emotional safety, physical safety, and that always needs to be the focus of this work.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to mention, I mean, it's the last week of October here, or just about the last week of October, and today, October 25th, is Go Purple Day, and we're in around 15 schools nationally, because this is October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it's an opportunity to destigmatize the idea that there is domestic violence in all communities, and that our hashtag this month is Stand Up for Shalom, as in Stand Up for Peace, that everyone deserves peace in their homes, peace with other people, and inner peace, and that we would stand up together, and it's a statement that we're standing up against domestic violence, and we're standing up with victim survivors, that we know you exist, and we support the idea that we have community resources to help you figure out your options and find safety. So you may have seen it already all over online, that we're trying to really engage community members throughout the community to stand up for shalom, for peace, in our families, in our homes, and in our community, and destigmatize that you should come forward, and we will believe you, and we're here for you. There are many people who are going to be able to help you through this journey wherever it takes you. So October is an exciting and busy month for us, and it actually leads into our annual brunch, which is taking place November 4th at the Sephardic Temple, to honor a lot of wonderful, wonderful members of our community who have made an incredible impact on our agency and on our community.
And a wonderful event.
Shani Traub, Brady Kess, Rachel Herkman, Rabbi Peretz Steinberg and Dr. Sarah Hannah Silverman are all being honored there for their contribution in bringing this issue and providing the services. So I invite people to join.
Right, and everybody can go online to shalomtaskforce.org to get more information. So just let's recap. Online, you have it broken down where control could be to isolation, to finance, to sexual violence, to emotional abuse, and physical violence. You know, when it says physical violence, you know, someone may punch a wall or throw things, but not physically harm the other person. Please explain how that is indeed still under your umbrella of abuse.
Because if you ask anyone who's been a victim of an episode like that, they'll say they feared for their lives. They feared for their physical well-being. If the person's capable of throwing our Shabbos dishes at me, next to me, and break their hand through the wall, they're capable of doing more to me. And so even if there's never been an actual incident of physical violence, there is an overt or covert threat that is absolutely possible. And the person lives in fear. And fear is really a telling symptom of this. This isn't about people having arguments. Most people in relationships have arguments. People in relationships might scream. I mean, you know, we can't all say all of our relationships are always healthy and perfect and, you know, Pollyanna-ish, but there's a difference between having a fight and even a screaming match than being fearful of your partner. And that's really, it's a pattern of power and control, and it's really this fear. And there's no equality, you know. And then there are some that
you know, actually make up their mind they're staying in such relationships.
Because people stay in relationships for a long time. And whenever we ask that question, like, why do people stay, I always kind of think to myself, like, why do we let the abuser abuse? Like, why are we blaming the victim again? But the reality is, why do people stay? And I know our timing is a little short, but I would like us all to think about why we would stay. I mean, we would stay because of the incredible shame in Shana. So one of the reasons we're doing Stand Up for Shalom, like, the incredible shame we have, the stigma of divorce that still remains in our community, the feeling as a woman in particular being responsible for shalom bias in our home and feeling like a failure, the shidduch issue, you know, it still remains. People still feel like it would be harder for their children to be married off. So we will get calls from women who have married off their last child. You know, you know, and then they're ready to have this conversation because they don't want to get in the way of their child. There's the fear of the unknown. Perhaps they've never lived as an adult on their own, and they don't know how to, or their fear of the financial concerns. How expensive is it for all of us to live a firm life and to do this as a single parent and not understanding what may be available to them? And it may be really hard. That's the reality, is being, you know, maybe really, there's the get issue, being afraid that they'll never truly be free. You know, that fear may exist. It may not happen, but that fear that the get will never be given. So, then there's ambivalence. And honestly, something that we don't acknowledge enough and we talk about clinically is just the love. That the person is typically not a bad person all the time. This is a person in our community that you do not go under a chuppah with someone that you think this will happen. It is devastating. There's incredible level of loss. I mean, yeah, it really is a great loss. And to acknowledge that there may be love, and this is the person you may have had children with, and to allow that space, that it's not black and white, and allow that space where, you know, you could have loved this person, there could be those feelings, and it could still not be safe, and it could still be the wrong place. So there's a lot going on, and to allow people to experience that array, to understand it's not black and white, or as my clients who say to me, it's not black and blue, but it's not black and white, you know?
Right. Thank you. Really, I want to say thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you.
Such an important topic. I want to thank you for being on tonight. I know we can go on, and I'll probably have you on to continue this conversation.
I always enjoy speaking with you.
You too, Shana. Thank you.
Thank you for everything you do.
Amen. Thank you. It's not me alone. You know that I have amazing staff, so it's all of us at Mass that do it together. So thank you. And anybody that wants to speak to Shana, you can call 718-758-0400, and we will make sure that you can get in touch with Dr. Shana Friedman from Shalom Task Force. And remember, anyone that wants to come for the Shabbaton this Shabbos, please call our helpline, 718-758-0400. It's an amazing Shabbaton, and I'd like to wish everyone a very good evening and a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you, and good night.